Finally a show. There's actually a show today. It's the news, according to me. Yeah, hey. Theological Thursday is what we got going on here. Good morning. It is, what is it? It's June. Thursday, June 18th already. Almost into July. The next thing it'll be July 4th. Hey, it's 7:16 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am at my home studio this morning. I'm a little bit behind. I've got 20. I wish I could have been on here about a half an hour ago. Maybe a little more. But, you know, there's dogs and there's cats and there's breakfast and you got to make some stuff for the cup. Got to make some stuff to put in the cup. Because what's in my cup is chai. I haven't had chai for a couple days. But getting up so early in the mornings that I haven't had time to get haven't had a chance to get chai. I could have made it yesterday. I probably would have had time. The next couple of rendezvous out there with my trips are going to be a little bit easier to do that. I've got a little bit later show. I have to do it. I'm going to have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and get going. It makes it a little bit tougher. Anyway, beside the point. Okay, I got this chai. Also, I'm in my backup cup. I have a little bit of what's left of my Chick-fil-A sweet tea that I got. Where did I get that? I believe I purchased that in Detroit, Michigan. I was in Detroit yesterday. It kind of had a mess going on there. Chicago airport was a mess yesterday. And yes, where did I go? I was it was kind of a mess. And so I ended up going to Chick-fil-A was right around the corner. I didn't know there was a Chick-fil-A in there. I went inside and went to the airport, was talking to some people, and then I ended up finding guys right before, you know, hanging around there, and then all of a sudden find out there's a Chick-fil-A around the corner. And, of course, it's not Sunday. Usually when I find out, it's usually Sunday. I went over and got myself some sweet tea. At that point, I'd already had some breakfast. But it was good to get that out of the way. Anyway, that's what I got going on. I have yet to put the little intro, our little disclaimer song, has yet to be put onto my cart here yet. I don't have the technology to do that. Well, I have the ability to do it, but it's a little bit more difficult to get that done. But this morning, I'm kind of settled on this one as being the one that will usually be the one we play. I think that's what's going to end up happening here. But it's kind of typically the one that's been kind of the one we're going to play. So I don't know. We'll try this and see what you think. Let me know what you think. And we're probably going to go with this. I don't know. We'll see.
Before we get started, here's what you should know. Welcome to the show. I'm glad you tuned in. I've got things to say and I don't know where to begin. But first, a tiny word from me. This is entertainment, not a medical degree. I'm not a doctor, not a lawyer, not a financial counselor. Nope. These are my opinions, just my take on things, not professional advice. Read the fine print, please, I'm here for your enjoyment. Nothing more, nothing less, but definitely don't sue me. Woo-hoo. I've given you my best. I might sound convincing when I get on a roll. And yeah, I googled that, so maybe I'm on a scroll. But for the real stuff, your body, your wallet, your rights, call a professional and maybe tune in Friday nights. Oh.
Opinions,
just opinions,
just my thoughts
for entertainment.
Just entertainment.
That's the shot. Now that we've covered all the legal stuff and more, let's get the show started. Woo! That's what you came here for.
Yeah, I know it's a little bit long, but I've got shorter versions of that. So it's going to be that one or the other one. It's going to be one of those two out of this. What do I have? Seven of them, eight of them that I've made. Maybe 10. I don't know. What are the main are there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I got 8 of them. And now the dogs are going crazy. Not sure what that's all about. But that's, you know, kind of expected to be. That's usually typical. About the time the show gets started, that's when they start going nuts. One dog is barking for no reason. The other one just kind of goes crazy. Anyway, what else we got going on? We have some things. We got some callers today. We got the podcast app is up and running. Of course, it runs really well on the show here at home. I have a little more hoops to jump through when I'm out on the road with the old laptop. But this works pretty well. It works best on Chrome. I'm probably going to be revamping some of this. It's going to be taking on a little bit different of a flavor because some of these characters are going to change a little bit. I'm going to be upgrading those a little bit, doing some back end work. Some of the stuff some foundational stuff in the background, just to kind of get some things changed. It was great for testing. They work really well. But I'm gonna come up with some different characters, some different types of character interactions as well. We'll go from there. But anyway, in the meantime, that's what we're doing. So let's just jump right into it. It's Theological Thursday. We're talking about, I don't even know what these guys are going to talk about. We'll have to just find out what they have to say. As we just go through the list here, let's kind of go backwards on the list. Let's talk to this one first. I never usually use Chloe first. Chloe's kind of the Valley Girl type. You know, for those of you from the 80s, you remember what the Valley Girls are. But this, she's kind of a West Coast guy. She popped right up there at the top of the thing. It's kind of funny. Let's see what she has to say. Here is she thinks.
Greetings, Kevin. Pope Leo XIV just got a 7-minute stand.
Hey, Kevin, love the show. So I've been digging into this James Tallarico guy's claim that the Bible is silent on abortion, but Psalm 139, 13, 16, Jeremiah 1:5, and Luke 141, 44 all reference God forming us in the womb. Can you break down the actual Hebrew and Greek text that refutes his seminary spin?
Yeah, here's what we have. We end up with this issue. This is a common argument among the liberal theologians of the world. It is a, I think this guy did go to seminary, didn't he? Something like just James Tallarico, I think is his name. He's a mess. This guy's a mess. I know I'm going to probably take some flack on this because I know some of my listeners are of the Anabaptist background. Let me just be very clear about this. The leadership of the Anabaptist church movement, those who are in the seminaries, those who are in the upper echelon, the elitists, they wouldn't call themselves that. They think of themselves as very, very pious, very servant-minded. It is a very typically, very extremely left-leaning group of people. And I mean, we're talking socialists to the core that run these organizations. And of course, there are various. I'm talking about the mainstream ones. There are some smaller. Well, I don't know if they're smaller or not, but they're more fundamental. With regard, now I'm not talking about fundamentalists as the Jerry Falwell fundamentalist kind of. I'm talking about fundamentalists in their Bible believing and they just read the Bible and it says what it means kind of thing. There are still some Anabaptist groups that are in that category. But again, this gets into the whole thing. I've talked about this before, but this gets into the category of things being institutionalized. And then you come up with, you know, then you have all of a sudden you have this hierarchy that just starts to decide what the church is about and what people believe. And I have this, it just gets into some deeper things. Like, I'll probably talk about it at some point during the show here, but it has to do with some fundamental things about belief and about how it all works and how the church becomes the church, and it's not an institution to be ruled over people. It's an organization where people come together, you know, because of a common vision, much like our country, kind of thing. In the same way, it's so that's. Let's just go with it from there. Now, as far as this James Tallarico guy goes, to answer your question, right, I'm not going to give you an answer really because I don't really know. But this idea that abortion, the Bible doesn't directly address abortion. No, it does. It doesn't. It doesn't use the word abortion. I don't think anywhere. That's what he's trying to get at. Well, it doesn't. It specifically does talk about life, and there is something about life that is extremely precious, and it's all life. All life. Plant life, animal life, human life. You name it. Life is extremely a precious, precious thing. And even the act of taking an animal's life for our sustenance, for our food, is a precious thing. Very, very clearly, after the flood, some people call it the Noahic law, the Noahic law, or Noah, whatever it is, the law of Noah. At that time, there was not a Hebrew, there was not a law as like the Ten Commandments. That hadn't happened yet. So there was still a moral code, a moral law. And at that time, up until they believe it, that people were actually able to speak to animals, and there was this communication between humans and animals to some degree in the garden. And then there was this, the whole thing after the fall. There was still this. It's just a whole lot of speculation. There's a whole lot of Hebrew commentary about that throughout the whole process of everything that happened there between, you know, Adam and Eve, and then Noah and Methuselah, and all the people who were part of that whole line of everything that happened during that time, and then the time from Noah and when kind of humanity started over again, and how things came down from there, the history of humanity. The tough part of it is that we don't see life anymore. I think that my society starts to decline. We don't see life as a precious thing, and we start to degrade it. We don't treat it with the respect it needs. And then, you know, from there on, everything just kind of, society kind of falls apart because people are expendable. People are, you know, become more selfish and more it's a downhill slope. I don't know. Let me just let you respond here. I've been throwing out a whole lot of things. Go ahead and say what you're going to see. Let's see what the internet has to say about this. This should be interesting. Probably just going to mirror.
Technically speaking, you're hitting on something real here. Mm-hmm. When institutional theology gets divorced from the actual text and starts imposing a modern political framework onto it, you lose the coherence of what the original moral vision was actually saying. Uh-huh. The problem isn't that the Bible doesn't address life and its value. The problem is when scholars cherry-pick that framework to fit whatever ideological box they're already in, whether that's or right. And yeah, you're right that once a society stops treating life, any life, as inherently precious, and starts viewing people as expendable or just utilitarian units, the whole thing unravels because you've lost the foundational assumption that everything else is built on.
Yeah. If you notice, what he's replying back to, just pretty much mirroring everything I said, just kind of responding to everything I said, not really giving us any new information. But it's interesting that he didn't go anywhere from there. But it has to do with the fundamentals of what the church is. What is the church? Who is the church? How is the church supposed to function? And I've got some folks from friends. They're more Catholic. In fact, I got some friends that have converted to Catholicism, and I don't think they realize some of the finer points of Catholicism. I could never, as far as Roman Catholics are concerned, I could not become a Roman Catholic. There's no way. especially, just knowing some of their some of the theological things that they go on there. But anyway, don't get me wrong. There's plenty of issues with the Protestant Church as well, and Indiana Baptist Church. There's a whole lot of things going on there. But that's kind of where I fall with that. So there's this issue though among the with many of these organizations that they start to become liberal. They start to have they get inundated or infiltrated by leftist activists that want to use the church as their leverage, and they interject those leftist ideologies into their denomination and try to convert it, try to change it over and help it to become more progressive in their thought. And it's usually just a mess, typically. But that's where we end up with that. Anyway, we'll just leave it at that. Let's go with, I was trying to get Chloe on here. Let's try to get Chloe on here to push the button before she jumps around. There we go. Let's try that.
OMG, Kevin. Oh, did you see those SF Giants players wrote Bible verses on their Pride Night hats? Huh. MLB is threatening to punish them, and I'm like, since when is Genesis 1:27 controversial? Even J.D. Vance is mocking the league now. Why is our culture so triggered by Scripture?
What? J.D. Vance is mocking the league? Because they're... Yeah, I see what you're saying there. J.D. Vance has been out there a little bit lately. I'm not sure what's going on. I think he was actually on The View, and he made. I don't know that. Well, the Seals will clap for Whoopi Goldberg no matter what she says. But she was actually called on the carpet by some things. She was making some comments about all the. I should play that. I'm gonna probably play that next week if I get a chance. There's so many things I'd like to play on the show. I never get a chance to do it because I just did the way my schedule's been lately. It's harder to put those things together. But back to your question. This is where our society is going. You have to understand it is considered hate speech. Some of the scripture sometimes is considered hate speech, and this is where we're going. This is if our society continues to go down this hill. Not offending anyone, having to accept everyone, and promoting everything that's what the church would call immoral, then we're going to end up with this issue of the church becoming a hate group. It's considered hate speech. It's considered controversial. You'll be demonetized, deplatformed. You know, the stuff is still there. We saw it during COVID a little bit, and how that can happen. That same thing is still there. Trust me, the same spirit that has opposed humanity, the accuser, the adversary, has always been there. And it manifests in different ways, but right, you know, it's just, it always typically has the same playbook. And it's happening again, just because now we have the internet. It's just a different kind of format. But it's those things are all there, you know, social media, whatever it is, it's going to continue to happen. So we have, you know, this issue of large organizations who want, you know, because it's because it's Pride Month and these guys are being, I think they're being forced to wear, my understanding is they're being forced to wear some hats or whatever. And because of that, or whatever, or maybe it's their helmets, they're putting scripture verses on there. Or at least I think they're just putting the reference on. Maybe they're putting a whole verse. I don't know. And of course, they're coming under fire for that. And it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous that we have a society that can't accept that. It's because, well, it's hate speech. Oh, you're a bigot. Whatever it is, I think it just kind of shows where we're at as a society, or at least as a whole. If that makes any sense.
Okay, so like, I'm seeing this whole thing blow up on Twitter and TikTok right now. And honestly, the discourse is so polarized, it's giving performance art energy on both sides. The real question nobody's asking is why we keep acting shocked when corporations fumble the bag on anything remotely culture war adjacent, instead of just, you know, letting people exist without turning it into a whole thing.
I have no idea what you just said. The real question nobody's asking. There's this perception, and I think this comes from, I believe that there is a majority of people in America who actually believe kind of the basic fundamentals of scripture. They believe that I think there's a lot of bad theology out there, to put it lightly. But I think that there's a lot of that going on. But I think there's a lot more people who kind of believe when it comes down to it, when you kind of boil down what they actually believe. The majority of Americans, I think, would say they believe in the basic tenets of the Christian faith, the Judeo-Christian faith. On a general sense. The issue here is that the media would play it that's the wrong way to think. That's old time thinking. You're not hip. You're not with it. They get into this whole thing and they make you feel like if you believe that, you're alone. You're the only one out there who believes those things, and you're the oddball. And you need to, if you say anything, you're going to be, all the flying monkeys are going to jump in and they're going to pile on you. And which is just like what happens with social media. This is the same thing. I've got friends on social media that make some of the stupidest comments sometimes. And of course I don't jump in with it, because they always have their friends there. They have their little group of five or six people who are very quick. If you happen to refute anything that they say, yep, they'll post something, and you say, "Well, that's not accurate. This is what actually happened. Here's the receipts." They all jump on you. All the flying monkey. I call them the flying monkeys. And of course, they feel vindicated. They feel elevated. They feel it's this point of their own self worth is by what they've posted on Facebook or whatever they've done. They don't want to have a debate. They want to live on top of their little piggy pile, cream pile thing. And it's just a weird social experiment that we're conducting here with everybody. But it's what ends up happening is people they become quiet. Now, of course, when that happens, because you have the guts to stand up and say something about it, and of course, then you get piled on. And you feel like you're the minority, and of course, because you are on their channel, on their little page, among their friends. There's not going to be that many people who stand. Nobody else wants to stand up and become part of the. We just don't like. People don't like contention. They just don't like getting involved in it. They don't have to, especially when you have to face that person the next day at work or whatever it is. I can't stay out of it. I just stay off of Facebook primarily almost all the time now. Once in a great while, I'll post something or I'll go on and look at something that somebody's posted. I kind of pretty much look at it for the obituaries now. Pretty much all I find out, make sure everybody's still alive, and then I go on my way, on my day. Which used to be the thing we do in the newspaper. We had a newspaper, everybody checked the obituaries every day, and that's make sure they weren't in it. And then they would go on about their day. The Facebook has kind of become that, only we still miss things, because it's very easy to miss someone passing. And that's what bothers me the most is I think somebody passes and we just kind of expect everybody to find out about it. It doesn't always happen that way. I'm kind of concerned. I've got some friends that I know as one very long time, long lifelong friend of mine. His father's got to be getting ready to go. I'm concerned I might miss it. And I don't talk to him that often. He's kind of hard to reach. He's kind of a little bit of a recluse in life. He's not on social media at all. As far as I know, he might have a thing on Facebook. I don't know, but he never posts anything. And it's one of those things. And anyway, that I, what, did I answer your question? I don't think I answered your question at all. But there you go. Let's see what else you have to say about it, if you have anything else to say about it.
Yeah, so what you're describing is exactly why I basically rage quit most platforms. Yeah. Like, the algorithm literally rewards the loudest pile-on instead of actual conversation, so people who just want to exist quietly either stay silent or ghost completely. What you said about the majority of Americans holding those traditional values but staying quiet because they don't want the mob energy is real. And honestly, that's what's wild to me. The loudest voices on social media are not representative, but they've hijacked the whole narrative so hard that people think they are.
Yeah, it's the silo. I think they call it a silo mentality. People live in their little silos, and they don't ever actually get out and discuss anything or have any kind of decent, normal conversations with anybody else. And that becomes very dangerous because we don't. It's just a. You live in this little bubble, and you think that everybody in your bubble, and you kind of all convince yourselves that you're all right, and that's what ends up happening there. It's kind of a crazy way to live, but let's see what the skeptic
Kevin,
has.
Kevin, my man.
Oh, hey.
Quick question. Yeah. Texas Lieutenant Gov, Dan Patrick says this Talarco character is going to hell for blasphemy, but isn't Talarco. That playing God's judge? Don't get me wrong, the guy's theology is garbage, but shouldn't we let the Lord handle eternal judgments while we just call out the heresy?
Yeah. I get it. Talarico is the guy's name. Talarico is how you pronounce it. Talarco. Talarico. It's Spanish, I think, something, or maybe... Maybe Italian, but I think Dan Patrick went across the line there a little bit. However, I'm not going to judge him. If you don't get it. This idea that you say somebody's going to hell for something, it's now I've heard. I think more accurately, what you could probably get away with is saying something semantically. It's just. You know, that's the kind of that you could say. That's the kind of thing that will send you to hell. That's the kind of it's not saying somebody that they're going to hell for doing something, for saying something. That is a kind of a final statement there, and I believe that to be wrong. I have not ever. I don't know that I've ever said that about anybody. It just seems like it's a little too far to cross the line there, but. I understand they're getting, political races get very passionate. They say stupid things occasionally. Both sides do that. And it's just, everybody around that person typically will say it instead of the actual person. But I get it. He's very passionate about what he's saying and he's trying to puff himself into the argument. However, I also believe that he's just gone too far with that statement. Now will that hurt him? I don't know. I doubt it. I think the majority of people kind of want to see that kind of a stand when it comes to those kinds of issues. They want to see somebody actually stand up and kind of push back and do that kind of thing. So it's tough. It's a tough situation. To see how that's going to affect them politically, but yeah, I do agree with you. I think it's a bit wrong, as far as him saying that kind of thing. However, he's got the right to say it. It's this idea that we have hate crimes or whatever it is that we're talking about is just kind of weird. How you can hate is not a crime. It's just first of all, hate leads to crime, but the crime itself is the crime, not the hate itself. It's kind of a weird way of. Framing things nowadays, but that's where we go. Anyway, what do you think? What do you think, Skippy?
Now, hold on. I think you're dancing around something important here. Look, there's a difference between calling out bad theology and pronouncing final judgment on somebody's eternal soul. And yeah, that line got crossed. But back in my day, we understood you could disagree passionately without claiming to know God's verdict on a man. The guy's got every right to say it, sure. But just because you say something doesn't mean it's wise. And mixing politics with damnation talk?
Yeah, I think it's... it's a tough situation. I guess the, we'll just leave it at that. We're going to leave that one right there. That's where we're going to leave that one. So what else we got to talk to today? We got Elena. I haven't talked to Elena yet. She's still on the air for some reason. Elena's not... interesting. I wonder if I can reset Elena. Anyway, let's go to... Who we got here? We got the Billy Bob.
Howdy there, Kev.
Hey, how's it going?
There's a lot of folks out there might call me a little slow about some things.
Yeah.
But I know what I know.
Yeah, I know you know.
You know.
Oh, I know.
And what I do know is that they don't know squat about things that they know.
Oh, well, that's
so
true.
So I don't know. Maybe we should just say no.
Actually, there's some truth to that, actually. Maybe we should just say no. Just flat say no. There was an interaction where Jerry Seinfeld was recently confronted by some folks. They wanted him to say Free Palestine or something. They were getting confronted. I think he was at a ball game or something. He was leaving. And they wanted him to say something. They got in his face. Of course, that's what fascists do. They want to make you repeat something. Say their name. Do this. Say it. Black Lives Matter. Say it. That's fascism, folks. That's when you're forcing someone to an ideology. You force them to say it out of fear of what, you know, they're standing there in front of you telling you that, you know, with a crowd of crazy people that with pitchforks and telling you to say something that you don't want to say, or else you're going to be, you know, ridicule, whatever, at the very least, you're going to be ridiculed, probably going to be physically, you know, physical action, interaction going on. That's fascism. And that's where fascism starts. There's a interesting thing that, in what you're saying, sometimes you just need to say no. But Jerry Seinfeld was walking out of this game or something, somebody got in his face. And all he said was, you know, they said something about Free Palestine. Say Free Palestine. Say, well, you know, say, can we give us a Free Palestine? Whatever it is. All he says is, it doesn't exist. And just keeps on going. Which I thought was brilliant. Now, he probably has said it before. It's probably not the first time he's been confronted with something. Somebody wants to say that or whatever. So I'm sure he had that kind of locked and loaded in there. But what was hilarious about it was just that he basically just said, no, I'm not going to do it. And he just gave you the reason right up front. He didn't even say no. He just gave you the reason why he was doing it, which I thought was kind of interesting. So yes, there is that. I don't know. I wish I could get. Let's see. I forgot that. I didn't give Billy Bob any context here because I didn't have him pulled up here. Let's see if he has any other important comments to make on what he's talking about here. Let's give him a chance. I'm just going to give you a chance to say no. Go ahead there, Billy Bob. Oh, did I not push on the button? Okay, so there we go. I didn't push on the button. That's helpful. Didn't let him speak.
Look, you hit the nail on the head with that Seinfeld thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes the best response to somebody trying to bully you into saying something is just to stand your ground and say no. Here's why, and move on.
Yep.
That's not being difficult. That's just having a backbone and not letting the crowd do your thinking for you.
Yeah, that's true. Yep. Well, that's some common sense there from Billy Bob. I would say that's just some common sense right there. We'll just go with that. Now, I don't know how to get Elena back on here. She had some things to say, I think, were kind of important. I don't know. I'm going to try to reset this. I don't know if it's going to work or not. Sometimes I can go in the background and get this fixed. I don't know. Let's see if I can reset Elena. I'm just going to edit her and see what she does here. Save changes. See if I can go back over there. See if she gets reset. No, she's still on the air. Something's wrong with that. So I'll have to do this. I'll have to refresh the page. There she is. There she's. Let's see what she has.
Greetings, Kevin. Pope Leo XIV just got a 7-minute standing ovation in Spain's socialist parliament after condemning abortion and euthanasia. Reminds me of Pope John Paul II's similar courage in communist Poland during the 1980s. Are we seeing history repeat itself with religious leaders becoming the last bulwark against secular totalitarianism?
That's a lot to that's a lot to choose, right? To some degree, maybe are we religious leaders being a bulwark? To some degree, that may be true. I have the feeling that there's a lot of religious leaders, however, that are they're askew in what they're promoting, what they're saying, which I think is to some degree they're going to stand up for some things in the right way. There's other things that they really miss. So I think if a people put too much, I'll say it, faith in their religious leaders, they're going to be very disappointed in the end. Typically, religious leaders and leaders of any kind, if I think people put them on a pedestal, people typically put people up on a pedestal just so they can knock them off. And the folks who want to be on the pedestal, frankly, I question whether they should be on the pedestal, and the people who don't want to be on a pedestal, who should be on a pedestal, are the ones who will sometimes get there and then the folks will try to find them out to be a hero. They start to worship them. It's just all kinds of weird dynamics with this leadership thing, which is, I think God recognized that early on with the children of Israel, with what was going on in terms of the Hebrew nation. He didn't want them to have a king. He wanted to be their king. Of course, they looked around. Everybody else, all the other nations had a king. They wanted a king too. Now, they didn't look at the problems with the king, having a king and what all that entails, especially if you get a bad king. So they wanted a king like everybody else. So he said, okay, this is not the king I've chosen for you. I've chosen this. I've chosen King David, but I'm going to give you Saul now for a while. And that was kind of the people's king, and he turned out to be a mess. And then of course, David was a man after his own heart. But even then, God didn't want them to have a king. He wanted to be their king. And of course, they didn't understand that because he's not visible. So it wasn't an easy thing for them to accept that. They wanted to be like everybody else. But I think that God recognized early on that when you have a man in charge, when there's a person in charge, there tends to be corruption. Even the best intended leaders can become corrupt, even if it's just in certain areas in their life. And it's so you end up with this whole thing where they can either be worshipped because they're doing a good job, or they can be manipulative, evil, self-serving. Whatever it is, there's all these things that happen because humans are that way. You're putting a human being in charge of something, and they're giving them power. Power corrupts, and it's just ultimate power ultimately corrupts ultimately. And so there's one of those things where it's just, I think it's tough for people to. They want to have somebody to look up to that they can physically see, and I think that's part of the issue. I kind of went off on a tangent there, I guess. But
you've hit on something historians see played out over and over, the tension between wanting an invisible, perfect authority versus a visible, flawed human one is genuinely harder to live with, even if it's actually healthier. What's interesting about David is that the scriptures don't hide his messiness, his adultery, his murders, yet he's still called a man after God's own heart, which suggests maybe the point was never perfection in the leader, but something else entirely about humility and course correction. The real danger you're pointing out is when we stop requiring that self-awareness from our leaders and just worship the image instead.
Yeah, and it's a rare leader that is able to, I think it's there are those really good leaders out there who do, first of all, they're able to point out their weaknesses without destroying their ability to be respected as the leader. This is a very unique trait in really good leaders. When they kind of take they point in the direction of where you're going. They put the vision out there that's bigger than themselves. And I think that that's some leaders, I think it's all about them and themselves and their vision and what they want to do, and it's all about them, you know, their image, so to speak, and their political power, and maintaining it with a death grip. Whereas it's others that are, and this is where I think some political parties just dive into this whole thing. They have to maintain power. They have to be in power. It's all about them because they want access. They want to be able to control the switches and levers and dials. And they want their way. They want their ideology to go forward, and they'll do anything whatever they can to stay in power because of all the, you know, they want to be the in crowd. A lot of it just has to do with wanting the popularity and the recognition and being called a great person and all the accolades that they get for being there. It's a very, very interesting, it's an interesting.
You're describing what I'd call the difference between servant leadership and power seeking, and it really does come down to whether someone can admit weakness without losing authority. That's the rare thing. The moment a leader needs the accolades more than the work itself, you've got someone who'll compromise anything to stay relevant. And that's when institutions start rotting from the inside out.
That's good. Yeah, that's right. So that's when it happens. Yeah. Yeah. Glad you're agreeable. That's unusual for the AI to be agreeable with me, which is pretty much all the time. So anyway, there you go, folks. That's the, those are the caller bots from the day. I want to get on from a little bit more news. We're going to play a little something maybe here. A little ditty. What else we got to play here? We got some other things we got to play. Just one of them. I think I can find one of these funny created clips. Let's see. No, we can't really play that one. Nobody's been talking about it. Yeah, what's we supposed to play this?
It's the news. It's the news. According to me, oh, it's the news. It's the news. According to me, it's the news. According to me, oh, it's the news. It's the news.
It's the news. It's the news, yeah.
According to me, morning. It's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, it's the news. According to me.
Yeah, it's the news. We I have the. Should we change gears a little bit? By the way, the podcast caller app is out there now. If you have a podcast, you can actually go check it out. It's the podcastcaller.com. You can go there and check it out. It's a free trial program. If you have a podcast, go ahead and feel free to try it. If you have any kind of, I think there's a way to get a hold of me on there. I believe there's a. I think that there's a support. Let's see if there is. I don't see it there. Start free trial, see pricing. Feature support. Where's support at? Yeah, there's support. Let's see what that does. I'm going to hit the support button. It doesn't go anywhere. Oh, there you go. It does. It'll pull up a support at podcastcaller.com. So just if you can email me there if you need. But if you have any kind of issues or if you want to pull up anything, a particular thing that you want to do with your podcast, we might be able to help you out and customize a system for you or to kind of explain to you how to get your particular podcast, how to integrate this with your podcast and make it work. If you want to do interviews, that kind of thing, whatever you're doing. So, feel free to check it out. Podcastcaller.com. Anyway, that's as close as you're going to get any kind of a sponsor that we've got for this show. I designed the app myself and made it me and Claude. We spent hours and hours going back and forth about how to get that thing made, and it's finally built and done. So there it is. What else I want to talk about? There are just a few things, a couple other things I want to talk about. Some interesting things in the news. Unfortunately, this is kind of a bad part of the news. There have been a lot of plane crashes lately. If anybody's noticed or not, it's like every other day. There's apparently NetJets, which is it's kind of a aircraft share program. It's almost like a timeshare program for aircraft. Very big company. I think this is the one that's owned by Berkshire Hathaway, which is Warren Buffett. They have had an excellent safety record, 42 years that they've been in business now. I know that they were back in the day when I was cutting my teeth as a flight instructor and trying to learn how to fly. That's when the NetJets thing kind of came about in the 90s. They called it a quarter share program. And so you would buy, I think NetJets was the one that started the whole thing. When they started out, they were quarter share. And what you would do is you would buy a fourth of a jet. So you'd put up your, and back then I think you could buy a jet for about $2 million or less. And it was, you'd put in your $500,000 or $250,000 or whatever it was. You'd buy a portion of that jet. And then they would go out, and what ended up happening was, so you'd buy a fourth of a jet instead of buying the whole jet. Well, then what ended up happening was they would end up having many, many people do that. So say you had five jets, and they had, say you had 20 people buying into this thing or whatever it is. So you got 10 jets, or what would it be? So you got five people, quarter share, whatever it is. You end up with a lot of jets because you got people buying fourths of jets. So you end up with, say you got 50 people there. I'm going to do the math, but however many jets that turns out to, 50 divided by 4, which is an easy number to divide. Go ahead and try it. Yeah, I'll let you do the math on your own. I'm going to do all your thinking for you. The, what is it, like 10, 15, 12, is it 12, 12, 12 13, whatever it is. And 12 and a half jets. They have these jets out there. Somebody's flying around half jet. So what ends up happening is you have all these people and you have all these jets. Well, you don't get your jet. You don't get the jet that you paid a fourth of. You just get a jet. They might have 10 jets out there. Say they got 40 people in this thing. They've all paid a fourth of it. So you get 10 jets, and whatever jet they happen to have available, that's the one that's going to show up. But you've paid for a fourth of a jet in that company, and so you own part of it. So it's what's called air charter service. It's not really an air charter because you own part of the airplane. However, they run it like an air charter. All their qualifications, all their standards, everything that they run is done just like a 135, what's called FAR 135 charter operation. And they were running back in the day. They were kind of competing with local companies just owning their own plane. There's still a huge amount of advantage to a company owning their own airplane. However, this was, it kind of enabled people to buy into an airplane and have access to an airplane that wouldn't otherwise be able to. I had set up something very similar at the same time, not knowing anything about NetJets or FlexJet or QuarterShare. I didn't know anything about them really, other than that they were, that they were out there, kind of understood their thing. But I had set up a thing where I had an investment company. That investment company would own the airplanes, and then they would lease them to my flight school. Part of this was a liability issue, but it was also partly a way that so that if a person wanted to rent an airplane without going through the flight school, they could rent the airplane directly from the company that owned it, and they could hire their own pilot to fly it. And so that way, it wasn't a 131 or wasn't a 135 operation. It was still 91 operation. They just became the operator, so they could operate the airplane. Hire their own pilot to do the flying, and it was who they were renting the plane from was a different company. So worked out very well. It was kind of like more like a club kind of thing. And then investors who would invest in that thing would get the airplane at a discount rate. So if a company wanted to put $5,000 in it, it was like a straight line interest type thing for 5 years, whatever, they would put in $5,000 or $10,000, and they would get 10% straight line per quarter on their interest. It was 10% per year, but it was paid up, but quarterly. We wouldn't compound. And at the end of that, their locked-in period, whether it's 5 years or whatever it was, they would get their money back, just their straight money back. Wouldn't get any. Their interest was already paid, so it was already paid out quarterly. People really liked it. It was a good deal for somebody who had some money sitting around. They could just kind of put their money in, let it sit there, and do their thing for a while. And then in the meantime, if you did that, you also got a discount. If you rented the airplane, if you were a pilot, or if you wanted to rent the airplane, you could rent the airplane for a discount, which was a good deal for them. It's kind of like owning the airplane, getting, being able to use it for less, basically. And then having somebody else take care of it. So you didn't really have any overhead. You didn't have any kind of weird expenses coming up, like an inspection or something that goes on. So it was a good deal for everybody all around, and it gave us the operating capital to use the airplanes for our flight school. So we'd use those airplanes in our flight school. And among other things, and we could also do pilot service. Our pilots were all qualified to fly the planes because they were already on the insurance, so they would hire our pilots to fly them. It was a brilliant way of doing it. It was out without having to go through the 135 issues. But the only thing was that the operator becomes so say company ABC comes up and they want to rent the airplane and they want to fly one of their salespeople out somewhere and they hire one of our pilots to fly it. So they would rent this airplane from company X, you know, XYZ, and they hire a pilot from us, and we fly, you know, if we fly that airplane, their airplane, because they're renting the airplane, they're themselves from somewhere else. They fly that airplane somewhere from point A to point B, and if that airplane crashes and somebody gets hurt on the ground, they are liable for that. The company is liable for that. They become the operator, which is the biggest issue with that whole thing. Well, I ended up working out with our insurance company. We were able to find a coverage for anybody who, like, renter's insurance at that time was kind of a little bit more rare. We got renter's insurance for anybody who wanted to rent the airplanes, and some of them just carried a policy that, because if they used it very often, they just carried the policy for the year or whatever. It wasn't very expensive. But that covered them with their liability, at least to some degree. If anything happened to the airplane, if it went down, you know, took out a power line or something, if something weird happened or crashed into a residential area or something. It was one of those things where you had to have all your bases covered. And I, of course, I would talk to the FAA about every day while we were doing all the stuff and trying to make sure everything was on the up and up. Local charter certificate holders did not like it. They didn't like me for doing it because they felt threatened by it. And then they should be, because I was reaching into a market that probably wouldn't have ever called. These people would never have called a charter company because they couldn't afford it. But they could afford this because it was more affordable. It was a better deal. They would have just driven the stuff up there. They shipped it a different way. It was kind of an intermediate. Or that's what's happening with the FlexJet thing. It was happening. Same thing was happening with that. There were people who could afford airplanes that couldn't afford to buy one outright, but they could afford to do this kind of a thing where they would have a fourth of an airplane. They didn't use it that much. They wanted to use it occasionally. They were willing to share it with somebody else. Couldn't justify owning the thing, 24/7. Well, there was a lot of corporate operators that got into it that shouldn't have, because they found out later on that they didn't have the ability to use the airplane. They were paying a premium for that thing. You're paying, not only were you paying outright for the airplane, say you paid $250,000 for your initial investment, then you had to pay a yearly, like the timeshare programs do, you had to pay a yearly maintenance fee. And on top of that, which was kind of adjustable. And then you also had to pay any per mile cost you got. So you want the airplane to show up at a certain time to get there, and you want to take you to such and such place, and you want to be there for a week, and then you want to come back and pick you up or whatever and take you home. There was all kinds of ways that they figured out those rates. And if the plane was going to sit there and wait for you, it was going to be one rate. If it was going to fly away, and because it was kind of a daily rate to use the airplane. So they would charge you that. And so it's very expensive. You're paying a premium. However, you're not paying for the airplane, and you're not having to pay for weird expenses at the end of the year when you do your annual inspection on the airplane or whatever you're doing. So it's just, if anything goes wrong with an airplane, they find something in an inspection, it can cost you, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000, $100,000, whatever it is. And you don't have to deal with that with this particular kind of setup arrangement, this kind of arrangement. It's just, there's no surprises really. You know what you're paying for up front and how much you use it. So if you're going to use it three or four times a year, or, maybe once a month or whatever you're flying, you want to fly a group of people out somewhere, do something, whatever you're doing personally or business-wise, it makes more sense to do it with a quarter share program like that. So Berkshire Hathaway kind of was the forefront in that whole thing. They have a very good program. Now, there's others out there doing it as well, not doing it as well, but they are doing it as well. Some of them are better than others. I just know that I when I hear them on the radio, when I'm a pilot, I'll tell you which ones are the best ones. There's some that just aren't competent, in my opinion, but I should say as competent. They're fine. They do a fine job. They obviously aren't. But this was a weird deal. They were coming back from Mexico. Diverted to Laredo. Now, I've been into Laredo. Laredo's kind of a weird airport. The approach there is a little bit weird. It's a very high elevation airport. I think it's 4,000 or 5,000 feet above the sea level. But it's desert, and it's there's nothing out there. really, it's just, I mean, it's just very much desert there. And so it's kind of a weird, was it Laredo or El Paso? I think it was Laredo. So it's just kind of a weird area. It's the approach in there is kind of weird, but that wasn't the problem. Now, what got me was that after they crashed, there was still a fire. So there was still some fuel on board, which they claimed that it ran out of fuel, or it was running low on fuel, which is why it diverted. And I don't know why necessarily that it would have caught on fire. Now, it wasn't a huge fireball post-crash. I think they tried to land on a highway. They hit a pole. And this was at night, which is very difficult to do. They ended up hitting a pole. Things broke apart. The pilot survived. And there's one person who died was the main guy from the company that was on the plane. I think his family was also on the board. I think they all got off. Everybody got off except for him. I was able to get out except for him. He was the only one who passed away. So that was a bad deal. That just happened night before last. And then we had, of course, the B-52 that crashed, which was it was like a maintenance test flight of some kind, I think, or something. Then there was of course, the helicopter crash down in South America. There was also a fighter jet that went in. I think it was, that was an Asian deal. Then something else. There was something else. Another crash of some kind. It was just, there've been a couple of small plane crashes, but it's not been a good week for aviation. It's just been almost every day. It seems like there's been something quite traumatic happen. So hearts go out to all that, and hopefully they're okay. The some other issues going on. Like I said, the thing about Whoopi Goldberg with J.D. Vance being on their show, she went on this whole tirade about how blacks are having their rights taken away. They're erasing black history and all the things that have happened, bad things that have happened to blacks and in the museums. And she's trying to come up with all these ideas, and other people have to. He's like, well, name something specific. She couldn't name anything. Well, they're just so many. There's just so many. Somebody says museums, like museums, and then somebody else says something else. I like that. And she couldn't name anything. She was just, you know, off on this tirade about it. Makes me cough to talk like her. Anyway, so she says all this stuff, and obviously she didn't know what she was talking about. When you kind of drill down and ask them for specifics, that's when things fall apart. Can you name some, just what do you mean specifically? Tell me what, first of all, you know, a lot of times the federal government has nothing to do with the museum, what the museum's put in there. Matt Walsh has been doing a really good job talking about history. In fact, a lot about black history and some things that have happened and how we've been sold a bill of goods. There's actually been a lot of lies. Rosa Parks, for example. That whole story was very... That was a setup. The whole thing, the way, if you look at everything that happened around it, it was very much... And of course, now they've been lying to you about all this... His big thing is they've lied to you about all this stuff, and what else have they lied about? And just he's really been going after it lately in terms of, you know, what really happens and how people are depicting it to have happened. Just like this whole thing with Carmelo, they still have not backed down this idea that there was four kids that came over and they were doing a beatdown on Carmelo, and he had to defend himself. So he pulled out this knife, and it was just a little Swiss Army knife. It wasn't a Swiss Army knife. There's a picture of this knife, I guess. It was entered into evidence. That is not a Swiss Army knife. Anyway, they're just stuff like that. Just the way they're going, where they're going with all this stuff is just... one of the most disgusting things I think that I've heard come out of this group... That's protesting and trying to make a big deal, trying to make this him into the next George Floyd, which is a whole other thing. The thing that's really been disturbing to me is hearing people say, "I don't want to say this." They wish they could dig him up and stab him again. He had it coming to him. He was a thug. He was a bully. He was a bigot. All this stuff. the irony of it all is just blows my mind. And even when confronted with the facts on the case, they still will not, they will not acknowledge it, because they have gotten into this frenzy of misinformation that is just off the charts. Anyway, having said all that, folks, let's listen to this little ditty thing and let's see where we go from here. I guess we'll just...
Seven, four. But wait, there's more. 6, 5, 1. We're almost done. 7, 6, and 85. Text that number. It's alive. Text that number. Call that number. Don't be a loser.
Don't be a loser. Don't be a loser. We have a lot of things to get into. For tomorrow's Financial Friday, we'll see what ends up happening. I know Harsh has been doing some stuff, but we'll find out what happens with the interest rates and all that kind of stuff. I'm sure that there's going to be some questions about that from our callers. We're going to have callers back again tomorrow. And maybe, if all goes well, I will have time to put together some actual audio clips of some things I want to talk about. We'll talk about a few things politically tomorrow as well and see how that goes. But anyway, folks, thanks for listening. Thanks for... liking, sharing, subscribing, all the stuff that people do. I don't know if there's any way to do that with this show. I have no idea. Just find a way to do it. I don't, or maybe not. Maybe just, I don't know. Whatever you have to do. Folks, thanks for listening. Like I said, tomorrow's show will be Financial Friday. A lot of things happening financially around the world. Gas prices are dropping like a rock. And we'll see what happens with that. Supposedly an agreement has been made. Talk about the financial ramifications of that, economic ramifications. Sound like Billy Bob now. Folks, God bless. Have a great rest of your day, and I will talk to you tomorrow. In the meantime, see ya.